listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live.
This is the Spirit of Life Metaphysics Radio Program, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Michael Kelly.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, August 28th. My name is Michael Kelly. I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Oh, good evening, Michael. I am so glad to be here. It is the last Wednesday in August.
Right. You know, it's the last Wednesday, and Wednesdays are the only days that matter, because that's when when we get to catch up with you guys. And thank you for being here. Thank you for everybody joining us in the archives as well. We do appreciate you taking the time out of your week. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. As always, we're going to begin tonight with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. Those are 1, do no harm, do right. 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4, we are all equal. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6. We are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7. Self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And finally, 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. On to tonight's topic, one that I'm excited for. I always love everything that's history, but this is going to be the history of metaphysics. And tonight we're going to be getting into the ancients, the real old and mysterious stuff. So I'm real excited to get into this.
To mention to everybody that this is a 3-part series. And tonight is the ancient, then we'll go into, what's that next section, Michael?
The Middle Ages through the Renaissance, and then for part 3, the Enlightenment leading up to the modern era. So,
and the Age of Aquarius.
Yeah, absolutely. And I am going to know what that is by the time we get to that chapter. But
well, for those of us who remember the 60s and 70s, that was a big deal. It was a big trend. There's a song about it, too, and I'll spare you from my singing. Michael was humming it before the program. I'm excited about this topic, too, because I think this is where you're going to mostly kick off tonight's program, Michael, with way back.
Absolutely. And, you know, I kind of want to start on the old definition of metaphysics. The word, as we say it, as far as I'm aware, based on what I've kind of looked up, is from Aristotle in his early works. He coined it after the word meta, meaning after in Greek. It came after the books of physics, which discussed things that change, and he wanted metaphysics to discuss things that don't change. And, you know, a lot of the things, the core fundamental things that we try to tackle in life, that we try to understand, the unanswerable questions that we've struggled with for so long, you know, those really haven't changed. But I want to look at the way in which human beings have tried to really understand the world around us throughout the ages. And really where we can start with this is going back as far as we can, and we really don't have any written record. It was pre-literate societies. You know, we want to talk about what did people do before the Sumerians? And, you know, really, it is believed to be animism religions, shamanistic religions. These, you know, fundamentally nature-based philosophies and spiritualities. And this is where I get to really lean on Dr. Vicky here with her vast expertise when it comes to First Nations beliefs and things like that. Because I do think, and correct me if I'm wrong, I do think that a lot of those belief systems in the Western Hemisphere here kind of have endured with obviously some change, but in their fundamental form for maybe tens of thousands of years.
Oh, lots, yeah. My indigenous adopted family and friends would say they have been in North America for like 50,000 years. However, you know, science disputes that, but it now they're getting evidence they've been here a lot longer than anybody knew. Now, that being said, from all of their beginning of time, believed in the spirit world, believed in, and they honored the spirit world, but the spirit are in everything. You know, it's like a tree has a spirit, a rock has a spirit, everything, and you honor all of life. And whatever you take, you then put something back. You never take more than you need, because it's respected and honored that anything that nature gives you, which is the spirit of all, you know, is a gift for you to live. And that goes back way, way back, at least all the oral history. So, and I think all indigenous cultures kind of did that. I think that if we go back a few thousand years, we don't know, but we can only imagine that, you know, there was wasn't necessarily an organized religion, but if you believe in aliens and so on, you know, they believed in the sky people. So, and they were the gods.
Mm-hmm.
You can go back to even in the, you know, what am I trying to say? You know, the old Scandinavian folklore.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, that goes way back. And there's, you know, the Earth world is H-E-L. Then there's the Midgard and the Asgard. And that goes back thousands of years, at least from what we're told. Again, there's no evidence of that. But even if we go back 2,000-3,000 years, then it's, yeah, for sure. You know, that's another oral history.
That's the thing.
Very pantheistic.
Yeah. I think, you know, you look at how animism, shamanistic societies evolve into some more dogmatic, I'd say, polytheistic religions. Because really, if you look at any region of the planet, be it from the, you know, old Fertile Crescent in the Mesopotamian area, you go to the Indus Valley, you go to the ancient Chinese civilizations, they all have polytheistic religions. I mean, I think that early human beings are struggling with survival. You're very much, at least new to being the apex predator, if even that. And we're trying to understand and quantify the world around us. So, like you said, a tree has a spirit, all of these things, because it's, what does it mean to us? And a lot of early worshiping of the sun, a very profound and powerful thing in our lives. They had to look to the stars to know different patterns, to know navigation, to know timing of seasons. And all of these things play into, especially the consistent, thing of human curiosity, human creativity, this imagination that we have. And it kind of feeds into it, but it also, there's a very real thing. There's a very ineffable thing that you cannot really put into words. You can kind of feel when you're out in nature hiking. Dr. Vicky, I know you're more attuned to this than I, but I think this leads into more complex ways of tackling these things. And it's really just interesting how it develops. And it seems so consistent across such a large plane, really throughout the ancient period.
Well, even Dr. Zoran in the chat has mentioned Buddha, Confucius. You know, they go back a long way.
They do, but not so far back as polytheistic.
That's true.
I mean, that's true. Buddhism is maybe 500 years before Christ. Same with Confucianism, a little bit predates that, I think. I don't have it in front of me. And even those, they kind of, again, they are more complex, more elaborate, more sophisticated ways of kind of looking at these same things, but we're still trying to tackle the same subjects. What is life? What is it to be a human being? What is consciousness? Mm-hmm. And then you even get to the point where, why are we here? And, you know, I wonder if, and this is all speculative because we're talking about pre-literate societies. I wonder if the question of the meaning of life was really a big thing in early societies and early metaphysics and looking at the world, because I think when you have a much more visceral relationship with existing and survival, do you stop to ponder why, you know, we're here in the first place, if we have a purpose to meet, or are you still more kind of connected to that animism, that that connection to the natural world, the natural cycle?
Well, I think that there's always been a curiosity. I guess if we go back to the Stone Age hunter-gatherers, I'm not so sure they thought about it, but at the same time they interacted with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we look at it that way, there was a belief, I think, from what I've understood, that nature would respond to what you're doing. Or how you are, or if you're, you know, it's kind of like an indigenous man once said to me that this elk just showed up, and that was an offering from the gods, you know, from the spirits. And that was so the whole community could eat. And I think that there's an element of that, even if we go way back to hunter-gatherers. I would think so. I'm only imagining because it's the interaction with life, interaction with nature.
In terms of, you know, kind of the gods providing how we're kind of viewing different things.
Yeah,
I kind of think of it in the Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I'm a little stuffy and allergy ridden, so I'm not thinking as clearly. But the hierarchy of needs, where if you have your basic needs met, you can kind of go up to that upper echelon of thinking. And I really don't think it's until we get to agriculture, you know, domesticating animals and things like that, where we can sit down and really think in deep and meaningful ways, so much so that we can codify it into, you know, the ancient religions and things like that. And when I talk ancient, I'm really talking going back. I'm tens of thousands of years and on. Where did it start? Why do we kind of look at things the way we do today, the way that we do?
Well, I think, I do think we have to consider that not everybody thought about it. Kind of like today, not a lot of people think about it. So I'm sure, but a community that has that a singular belief system, or, you know, you kind of take that on through your upbringing. And I'm sure there were some people that shrugged and said, yeah, I don't think that way, you know, so.
Well, in terms of like, for example, you know, the monotheistic idea that, you know, Christians believe that we're here to fulfill God's desire. We're going to populate the earth in that way, that God has a purpose for us. Yeah. My point being is that I don't really think that even up into the polytheistic era that they thought that God had an overall purpose for us. I think they viewed gods as much more transactional, as not omnipotent as we think of ours. And I think that their relationship with their spirituality and with their gods is a fundamental difference in how they viewed their reality than we do ours.
And that's because there was a stronger connection to nature.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even if you have to go and pick berries,
mm-hmm.
that plant is providing for you, and you honor that. So there's this kind of a given about that, and I think that's where, you know, that understanding of spirituality. Now, I think where the science comes in, you know, science part of metaphysics, is, as you said, Michael, it's what are the stars saying? When does the sun go down? When does mm-hmm. it come up? And the seasons, and you have to prepare for the seasons. So I think that there's this, even though we can see it as two-part, it really is all one. So it's that whole term of metaphysics.
Mm-hmm.
So you're living with a spirituality or a spiritual sense of the world around you, but also interacting with time, space, and the science of life. Even though they may not have seen it as science, they just see that as part of nature.
Yeah, and that's the difficult thing with language, isn't it? That, you know, we assign meaning and different things to labels, and it becomes kind of a game of semantics almost, too, but I mean, what was science before science? You know, it was hard-earned experience, I think. A lot of people ask, you know, who was the first person to eat this or that? Who was the first person to eat a clam? You know, what was it? What were they thinking? Well, they were probably starving, and they probably had no choice. And, you know, that has taught us a lot of hard-earned lessons, and, you know, rinse and repeat. But you know, what it really gets me is, you know, studying the idea of consciousness and how we view the world, it is, you know, yeah, you're absolutely right. We had such a much more fundamental link to the primal, to nature, to the world around us, both its savagery and its beauty, I think. But the thing that really gets me is how accustomed we are to change. And I think about that a lot because in the modern era, even more so than it has been in the last, you know, five centuries, things change so rapidly. Whereas, you know, you could look at the ancient Egyptians as a society. They existed for thousands of years, you know, 4,000 at least, perhaps more. And in that time, their gods changed. In fact, the first known monotheistic religion was an Egyptian pharaoh who made one of their gods the only god. And that yeah. got turned over a century or so later. But they had between 1,400 and 2,000 gods over the course of their history. So it wasn't static. It did change, but it changed so very slowly that you would have just countless... You know, especially in the Stone Age, prior to the Stone Age, in the hunter-gatherer stage, millennia of, you know, relative, as far as we know, because again, it would have been all been oral traditions, and it goes back into the prehistory, into the mists of time that we'll never know. But it is just fascinating to me, trying to get my head into what an early human being experienced in life, what they thought about. And how that links to us today. And yeah, you know, in the modern age, when we're trying to tackle metaphysics, we have so many more tools at our disposal. Excuse me.
Well, we do have the... It boils down to curiosity also.
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course.
And that's part of our, like, why and how. You know, it's like if something upsets you enough, you'll just go invent a new one. You know, mm-hmm. Whether it was the invention of the wheel, or maybe aliens gave them the wheel, who knows? I think that it's very hard to get in the mindset of to understand natural thinking, like the natural interaction with life. But what we innately all have is the curiosity, and we innately all have hope. And that's how evolution occurs. So we might, as you say, during the Egyptian time, you know, there's these certain power struggles or my God's better than your God kind of thing. But there is this curiosity to want more, greater, better. And how do we do that? But how does it work? So you have to learn how it all works. And that's the curiosity. And I think that's what metaphysics boils down to. If you see it in a whole thing rather than it's just its small parts.
True. And just thinking about that, of course, sometimes you got to take the small parts apart and look at them, but, you know, the whole forest for the trees things. When you were talking earlier and looking for something, I kept coming back to, I think you were talking about aliens or something, I kept coming back to the Book of Genesis, which would have, you know, kind of been more Bronze Age ideas that came about. But the whole idea of God walking through the Garden of Eden, and their very literal meaning in that age with those kind of the words they used and our translations of them. When they talk about God making man in his image and woman, it's a very literal sense, meaning look to make it look like God, which makes me put my, you know, ancient aliens hat on and, you know, get my hair all crazy looking so I can think about that and what if they actually were aliens that came and kind of did some genetic modifications. But that's all aside. Go ahead.
I think that we have enough evidence now to know there are things that we don't know.
Oh, God, yeah.
And it's like all the glyphs and pictures of, you know, human bodies and dog heads or lizard heads or something else. I mean, there's enough. I think who would think of doing that?
Human imagination.
Works somehow in their reality.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think when you have human curiosity that meets human imagination, I think that that's how God was created. Mm-hmm. And I think that we have more primitive, like, I think there's primal things that link us to the world around us. We can always feel that there's something a little bit extra that's not explainable by materialism. And we're just trying to define that. We're trying to define, you know, where's the mind located, all these different things. But anyway, thinking about the ancients always fascinates me. And thinking about how that kind of links forward is always just been a really big topic in my mind. And I think it's the fundamental It is fundamental to our understanding of the world around us to know where we came from and how we've gotten to where we are now, and how fundamentally different early human beings thought than we do now. I think we have the tools of modern science of different looking at things with a different view. I think being able to look at the globe with pictures from space is something that would just have shocked the ancients. You know, the level of common knowledge that we have today is astounding in historical terms. Just, you know, early human beings, just, we didn't know. We had no idea of a lot of the nature of things. Albeit by the time of the ancient Greeks, they still had an idea of the Earth being a sphere and all of these different things because of their observations of the planets. And again, we start to see that rapid change, more so than it had been prior. And it kind of just builds and builds and builds, and it builds into, you know, spreads throughout the world. It goes into Scandinavia, where you were talking about the ancient gods of the Midgard, Asgard, and, you know, all of the different gods. And the fact that there's so many similarities between the different pantheons, even from vastly different regions of the planet, it speaks to something, doesn't it? That human beings, again, that curiosity, that imagination, we're trying to latch onto things, onto these fundamental concepts of existing, right? Bountiful harvests, love, war. Go on.
Well, you know, you think about navigating by the stars, you know, navigating the boats by the stars, you know, and finding different ways. There was this interactive kind of experience with nature. And so, you know, I just like to qualify something here, explain something. Natural thinking is very different from intellectual thinking. And what I learned over my lifetime with my experiences, well, I should back up and say what happened to me. I was at a ceremony and sitting with some elders, and the drums are playing and the singing, and I had this experience, and it truly was an experience of no words, but translating through feelings and understanding thought without words. And it was a huge aha moment that indigenous, if your language is an indigenous language or not necessarily English, but it's the experience that indigenous people have, they translate to their indigenous language, which is way less complicated in so many ways than English. For instance, a tree is a tree is a tree, but it would be a tree that's got needles all year. It's a tree that provides this. You know, it's not, they don't have names for it. You know, certainly not Latin names. It's not a pine tree or a birch tree or anything like that. It's a tree that. And so then they translate that experience, that feeling, into their indigenous language, and then they have to translate into English. And I went, oh, natural thinking is the experience of the moment. It's what are you experiencing, like the pictures, the feelings. And, you know, if you train animals, you want to think like a dog, or, you know, train them, what are they going through? Or, you know, people who talk to, well, my experience was training horses for a while, and I started to tune into the way that natural being feels, pictures. Helping people to train their horse, to say, well, you have an agenda, and you sending that telepathically to that horse. You go out and you do that training, it all goes well, and you say, wow, this is going great, I want to do something else. But you haven't taken a moment to send that message, that visual and the feeling to the animal, the horse, to do something new. Oh, and every time it works, it just does. That's when I got this understanding, a better understanding of thinking without words, interacting with nature. So that's what I mean by before we used, and I'm sure every culture had its own language, don't get me wrong, but it's how you experience the language, how you experience each other. And then the words come. How am I going to identify that? How am I going to explain that? You know, how do I express this? You find a dynamic of language. So that's where I go when it comes to metaphysics and, you know, how we label things. Sorry if you can hear that train going. It's the interaction with nature and the feelings with nature. So, and that goes with their spirituality. You have an experience that's not in your reality, in your physical reality. It must then be the gods, you see, or some otherworldly thing that we're interacting with. And in every culture that I've ever read about or heard about, there's always been one or two or more who have a gift for telepathy, visions, you know, prophecy. And a lot of them was, you know, drug-induced. You know, you have your particular plant, and then you go into a ceremony and you have visions. That's been told throughout history. So I think that, you know, this understanding of metaphysics goes way back in many different layers of understanding.
And so, I agree.
Kevin is saying, is it possible to think without words?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, I don't get it, but I guess sometimes, but I think we all do from time to time. But I think we've discussed on this before within the last couple months where we talked about the different ways in which we consciously think, some in words, some in images, some in just kind of, you know, more feeling and action. And I guess that's a big part of what I wanted to get at, too. You know, when I think about metaphysics, the study of awareness, of what is, of consciousness, of all these things that we try to tackle, it, to me, a fundamental part of my understanding is the scope of known history and how much of an advantage that gives us into looking at, you know, what is reality, what are we experiencing, because we can kind of, we can look at all the different ways in which we have experienced reality before. If you look at history, you will find every possible variation of humanity. You will find every way in which humans can exist. Multiple different societies, multiple different ways of living, of thinking about the world. And I think, just like you said, metaphysics is in a lot of ways layered. We have to understand that the way that we think as individuals, ourselves, and as a society, the way that we view the world, is not static. It's not the way that it used to be. And if we're going to truly understand what this reality is, we have to understand that that perspective is such a big part of it. And it's something that's constantly changing. It's something that's constantly based on our awareness of the world around us. And that when we think about the ancients and where we came from, we have to think of it in the context that they had a much, much lower level of awareness about the wider scope of reality, about galaxies, about, and they had a fundamental idea about it, but to know what we know, to know about the different life cycles of stars, of, you know, the...
Well, they didn't have Google.
Well, that's the thing, yeah. But even prior to me, but yeah, the modern physics, modern, you know, archaeology, anthropology, history has given us so much. So, given that that is something that, to me, is so fundamental to my understanding of metaphysics, I really wanted to dive into that. Yeah. And I think, you know, as we're going to kind of wrap up before we get into cards, I think it's another interesting way to look at it, how much it's changed in terms of how we look at things, to look at, you know, the ancient spirits and things like that, and how different societies look at things like ghosts and demons and, you know, malicious and beneficial spirits.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of these different things, you're going through old Germanic traditions, Norse traditions, you know, again, pre-literate. We only know about them because of the Romans. And... You know, I love how, you know, we can kind of go back as early, really earlier, but one of the great early examples are the Greeks and the proto-Greeks, who would have been Homer, who wrote the Iliad and the Odyssey, and how ghosts are kind of used to kind of educate humanity. And then you kind of, in terms of, they will tell prophecies, they will tell you about, you know, things from beyond the grave, things that kind of try to open their eyes. And then you kind of cut to Roman culture. And they, a lot of times, would try to use ghosts and spirits for revenge. They would carve instructions on pottery and metal, throw it into a grave, and think that that would help them, you know, get the spirit of that dead person on their side to help them in a quest of vengeance and things like that. So you have these cultures that really put a lot of their own, you know, ideology and pathos and ethos into how they view these common ideas.
Yeah, you get buried with your dog, you get buried with your horse, you get buried with all your tools for the afterworld.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were lots of, as archaeology is slowly digging up more stuff.
Oh, yeah. So we can look at things that are common to everybody, like ghosts and spirits, but how each culture looks at those common ideas and things really tells a lot about them and a lot about who we are as human beings in general. So I think that's kind of a good place to cut it off for this chapter. And of course, we're going to pick up again next week. And I think we're going to get into some fun stuff, because as we kind of come into the Middle Ages, post-Roman, we get into a lot more detail and we get into, you know, a lot of the early ideas about, you know, as Europeans and as people from the Middle East spread out and encounter these societies that are pre-literate, we get to know so much about them. And we have, you know, things like the old witch scares and things like that. But so
And then those religions banning anything metaphysical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Only wanting their view of what, you know, their opinion about what is reality and things like that and all the reasons for that. And then into the Renaissance, and where kind of that slide backward stops, I think. But so I think that'll be interesting. I hope you guys join us next week. But yeah, it is time for cards, and I think we got some names coming up.
We do, but I'd just like to insert here something Dr. Damien has written, a quote from Zhuangzi. Words exist because of meaning. Once you've gotten the meaning, you can forget the words. Where can I find a man who's forgotten words so I can have a word with him? I love that.
That is worth
repeating. You have to think about it.
Yeah.
That's a thinker.
Very true. I mean, the same thing as, you know, what is in a name? A rose by any other name would smell just as sweet. But there's a fundamental truth there. But,
all right.
Good stuff.
We have Edward first. Michael, what have you got for your inner oracle self-discovery card?
All right. Dr. Edward, always good to see you. And tonight, I have number 30 for you. Greatness to deliver. Let's see. Every human being is born with greatness to deliver. Greatness embodies unique self-actualization and self-completeness, and does not settle for mediocrity. Greatness goes above and beyond what is common and aspires to nobility of character. Greatness is being part of the solution, not part of the problem. Remind yourself with the question, what do I need to reawaken in me in order to deliver my greatness? Remember, you are valued. Delivering your greatness is making a difference in the world.
Well, I got the Page of Cups. Now, pages are communicators, as I've mentioned before. But it's good news on the way. So, in your greatness to deliver, there, I suspect there's something here that might be asked of you, something that would be like you giving advice or you sharing your knowledge. So, and that's your greatness to deliver. So that exchange of knowledge. But I also think that there's good news on the way, but by way of acknowledging you for what you know. If that makes sense. Yeah, I think I said that okay. So,
I like it.
That's a good one.
It is. All right. Dr. Jeff, have you next? For you, let's see, I have number 43, expediency. Timing is everything. Some things call for expediency. Others require us to slow down. If you have a problem, you can take care of it now, or you can suffer longer and still take care of it later. It takes courage to face important matters when timing and opportunity avail, and wisdom to know when to slow down to assess the correct actions before acting promptly. For success in anything, do what you should do when you should do it.
Well, and I got the Fool. It's the first card of the tarot. Certainly in the major arcana, and that's the beginning. So know when it is time to start. So that's the message, Jeff. It's that feeling, that knowing all the signs are there, get started. So if the project or something that you're working on, you've thought about it, you almost have it together, I'd say watch for the signs and get to it. So it's kind of that you know, sometimes we all need a kick in the butt, you know, but that's a really good message.
I like it. Right. They're all good messages.
I'm just going to insert here that Dr. Mike has asked, has anybody seen the Y-Files on YouTube? I have been following the Y-Files pretty much since they started. This guy is amazing. And, of course, he's got that little goldfish beside him, and a, you know, a bowl. But it's a hecklefish. Thank you, for Damien, for that. Really good, insightful stories. He's, and really the story about that is he and his wife had been in California, and they were, you know, producers and so on. But COVID, everything dried up. So they moved, I believe it was to Texas, and started over. And they started this little venture, like of a podcast, and curious little stories. And they used to be 5-10 minutes long. Now he'll do a half hour, but then you can get little snippets of it. But they're always investigative. Now he has a team. He's really expanded the show. And, you know, he's done really well, but very insightful, very down to earth, doesn't go off on tangents. And, you know, he'll say, okay, this is the story, but there's no evidence, you know, or there is evidence, but not enough. So it's a really good program to follow.
Oh, that sounds interesting. This is the first I'm hearing of it, so now I'm going to check it out.
Yeah. We have Damien next, right?
We do. And Damien, for you, I have number one, perfection. Always remember that you are perfect just as you are, a perfect work in progress, always changing and growing. Today is a reflection of past choices, and tomorrow is changeable by choices made today. This card may indicate that a situation is either perfect or not perfect for you. Embrace all mistakes as they are vital to your growth while striving for a better future. Reflect to see what contributes to your perfect journey and move forward gracefully.
Well, it's very interesting that you got the Nine of Clubs, that Nine of Wands. Now, I call that one of the guard cards, and that's protecting what you have, which is interesting when it comes to perfection. I'm going to go with this. You don't have to defend yourself. You don't have to explain yourself. You just, if it's in a conversation, you state yourself, but you don't have to defend it. So you're that perfection in motion. Always learning, always growing. That's perfect in this moment. And continue to be that. So the conversation might also be perfect for you to learn other things about yourself. So it might be overcoming something in yourself at this time. Or you're triggered in some way of something you didn't even know about. But that Nine of Clubs is that self-protection, you know, and those boundaries. I like that myself. We're always learning about that one. So.
Good stuff. All right, I believe we have our card keeper herself, Wendy, next.
Yes.
And I don't think we've gotten any repeats so far tonight, so let's see if this is the first. Wendy, for you, I have number 42, trust and integrity. Integrity means being true to oneself, intuitively and sensibly. It is adherence to moral and ethical principles, soundness of moral character, and honesty. A trust betrayed loses integrity, and trust without integrity is empty. Trust, along with communication, is one of the two most important relationship traits. Move forward with integrity, remaining steadfast in the greatest relationship of all, yourself.
Whoa, Wendy, I like this. This is the Page of Clubs, and as I said before, the pages are all communicators. The clubs indicates, you know, that wands indicates changes. So you're a really good communicator on your own behalf, and you communicate well with others, and that's based on your integrity and building trust. So your new ventures and everything that you're doing is you're continuing to grow it and build it. It's all changing, but it's also that integrity that you have that is selling what you have. I love that. That's a great affirmation.
I love it. And Wendy has not gotten that card yet this year either, so a lot of new cards for everybody tonight. All right, I think that Let's see. I believe we have Dr. Zorin next, if I'm not mistaken.
You know, I have to inject. Yeah, I have to inject here.
Oh,
we have, the school has students from all over the world. And there are times Dr. Zorin actually stays up till his 3 a.m. in the Middle East to join us
Serbia.
In the program. Yeah, in Serbia. That's amazing, and we thank you for that, Zorin. I mean, it's great to have you here, and we enjoy your company. Thanks for the effort and being on the program.
Absolutely, and I can tell you, we're all the better for it. So we are the benefactors of your sacrifice, so we appreciate you staying up so late to join us. But for you tonight, hopefully this connects, I have for you number 6, boundaries. So let's see, number 6, boundaries. It's important for you to establish clear boundaries for yourself. Equally, it is necessary to be aware of others and to not overstep or encroach on their boundaries. This is a mark of a self-complete individual. Reassess and assertively protect your healthy boundaries while looking to see if you are overstepping elsewhere. Begin with asking yourself, who owns me?
I got the 9 of diamonds. So that 9 of pentacles to me is all about home, environment, and maybe it is about protecting that, you know, your little sanctuary. Wendy said you had boundaries back on 6/19. So back in June, you had that. It is about the home, and it is about family or people and setting up those boundaries. And maybe it is your call into action here. Maybe it is that, you know, there's certain people or energies that you don't want in your environment or with your people. So you're standing up on behalf of yourself and them. I know I'm very protective of my environment too. So, but this is saying there might be some boundaries that you have to set. I think that's an encouraging thing, just a little message. So I hope you can relate to that.
All right. I believe our last card of the evening is for Kevin. So if I have that wrong, let me know. But
nope.
Kevin, for you, I have number 23, meaning and purpose. Let's see. The meaning of life is built upon values and beliefs and remains constant. The purpose of life is the action plan for the meaning of life. The purpose can change. A sense of purpose always evolves. The question is not, what is the purpose of life? Rather, it is, what is the purpose of my life? True fulfillment comes when embracing your heart's desire with both meaning and a renewed sense of purpose to fulfill that meaning. This card can also relate to the meaning or purpose of a specific situation or lack thereof. Good.
The 6 of hearts. 6 of cups. And again, I see that in relation to exchanges within family, the interaction within family. The 6 is always more social. It's of service. And being in that suit has to do with affection, love, you know, spirit. So I think that meaning and purpose, you know, you're interacting or finding greater meaning and purpose within your small group, whether that's your intimate partner, family, or people you consider as family. And that a higher regard or interaction. So that's an evolution in my book. So seeing them differently, seeing yourself differently. And that's always growth. I love that.
That is a good message. I love it. Well, I think that's it for our cards this evening. And I think it's about that time. So I think we're going to kind of wrap up things a little earlier this evening. But I do appreciate everybody joining us tonight. And, you know, really, I think what I want to get through, or at least what I'm trying to convey, is really how differently human beings can look at existence from what I think we do today. And I think understanding all of the various ways we can look at this thing, at this life that we're all trying to define, we're all trying to figure out, we're all trying to quantify and things like that. If we're going to look at it in its entirety, I think we need to be open to all the diverse ways in which human beings have existed and have looked at these same questions. So I think, you know, with tonight, I wanted to really emphasize the different ways in which the ancients thought about the world in terms of existence to day to day, how they connected with nature, animism, the, you know, fundamental things about life. And then I kind of want to talk next week a little bit about how that transitioned in those Middle Ages into kind of becoming the proto version of what we're really used to today in modern Western society, at least, and kind of that journey. Because I think to understand where we're at, to understand metaphysics, to understand, you know, really what it is we're trying to do, we have to look at it in its entirety. So I thank you all for taking that journey with us tonight. And as we begin to wrap up, Dr. Vicki, any last thoughts on tonight or anything?
Well, I thank everybody for the feedback, first of all, in the chat with the cards drawn. Even Dr. Kevin has said he was a little apprehensive about a 14-hour flight he's about to take. It's to meet family.
So, very exciting.
That's great feedback. I'm glad you could relate to that, because honestly, sometimes I have no idea what I'm saying. It just comes out.
I know, I sure don't, so. But
so, I've enjoyed the show. I love talking metaphysics. Can't stop me sometimes. But, you know, meanwhile, everybody, don't let them push you around out there. That's what I have to say to close the show.
Well, thank you very much. And again, thank you, everybody, for joining us. Please join us next week. We're going to come up with a part two on this and then wrap it up the week after. And I think I'm going to be reaching out to some people for coming on for interviews and talking about some interesting topics after that. So looking forward to that. But until next week, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.